You're listening to This is Yoga Therapy. I'm your host, Michelle Lawrence, and I've had the opportunity to interview many of those who are making a difference at the intersections of yoga and health. And I'm here to share with you their stories and conversations. Thanks for listening. In today's episode, I interviewed Anjali Rao. Anjali, whose pronouns are she, her, is a yoga educator who offers a critical lens into the teachings of yoga in service to the challenges of the times we live in. Her work offers insight into the yoga stories and histories that have been obscured by heteropatriarchy and colonization. She brings an intersectional lens in integrating yoga philosophy and history with storytelling, imagery, and poetry. She's an Indian American immigrant, a cancer survivor, and believes that a dedicated practice of yoga in all its expansiveness can alchemize and heal the world by creating ripples of change within and around us. And I just personally love that. She's an aspiring writer, president of the board of directors of Accessible Yoga, which is an international nonprofit organization dedicated to sharing the teachings and benefits of yoga with those who have been marginalized. On the podcast, we dove into some of her work and put a spotlight on October's upcoming Accessible Yoga Conference. It's so great to have you here today, Anjali. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you share your background with us a bit? What was it like growing up in India? And was yoga always a way of life for you? Or how has that evolved for you?
Ooh, I like the last bit a lot. How has that evolved? Yes, of course, I can share my background. I grew up in Bangalore, South, which is a city in the South, as many probably already know. And I have lived in Bangalore almost the same number of years I've lived in the US, so about 23, 24 years. Life was fun. It was beautiful and also interesting, easy in so many ways, because obviously when you're younger, you don't see so much of the realities that so many Indians face and so many people all over the world face. And I grew up with yoga without knowing that it was yoga as a way of life. And by that, I mean yoga, which is, you know, the path of dedication, rather devotion, was always a big part of our everyday life. And karma yoga also. And again, I did not know that what I was doing or practicing was called yoga. It was just a part of the cultural ethos, being in the community, being in the collective, having a collectivistic framework for our life, our lived experiences. Putting the community and family, for example, as a primary stakeholder in most of the decision making that we make. It has its positives and its negatives, as you can imagine. But I grew up with this sense of connection and knowing that each of our lives are so interconnected with another, and be it our immediate family or our neighbors or our region that we live in. That was a big part of my life back there. And it's a big part of everybody's life, whoever has grown up in India. And I grew up thinking that I would do my bachelor's. I did my bachelor's rather in microbiology. So I have a very sort of interest in anything to do with science, and especially genetics, chemistry. So that was my background. But then I always was a student of Indian classical dance. So I have been learning three different dance forms, and the grounding of that classical dance forms or music forms in India is very rooted in philosophy. It's very rooted in spirituality and religion. So, and a lot of that has overlaps with yoga and yoga philosophy. So I've always had a grounding and anchoring in quote unquote what yoga is, but I just did not know it. In terms of an asana practice, my asana practice was much later in my life, which was in my 30s, late 30s, due to my diagnosis of cancer and subsequent surgeries. And, you know, so that sort of introduced me to the yoga mat, if you want to call it that. And it changed my life. Obviously, both have changed my life, both cancer diagnosis and treatment and even an asana practice. Because it connected me with my physical body, in amazingly simple and powerful ways. So I started working here as a yoga teacher for people going through health challenges, specifically cancer. I taught in Stanford Cancer Care Program and a local hospital here. Then the pandemic happened. So, of course, that's a whole another story. So that's a bit of my background. And I got to know Jeevana because of our interest in really integrating the teachings of yoga with social change. So I got to know of him, and then I got involved with the work that Accessible Yoga does.
That's so great. And we'll talk more about accessible yoga here next. I'm kind of curious about how your cancer diagnosis brought you to the yoga mat. Like, was that for folks specifically who were going through cancer? Was it in a yoga studio? Would you be willing to share more about that? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, it was very simple. I was a young mom then, mother then, of two children. My focus was basically to, quote unquote, get back to a normal way of life. And this obviously disrupted all our lives. So I quickly jumped into that thinking that, okay, now I'm done. I have finished my treatment and let's just get back to whatever that normalcy is. In that, one day I was just in the kitchen and was trying to open my tomato, like a pasta sauce jar to cook, and I just couldn't. And I then realized that I have absolutely very, very zero, very limited upper body, you know, strength. And that got me into research about how I can gain that without really grueling physical activity, but doing it with a more of a holistic perspective. And I researched a local yoga studio with a wonderful teacher who gave me a lot of space, and she allowed me to do whatever I wanted to do, which I couldn't do so many things.
The yoga mat. I love to hear that.
Yeah. So she was just very like, she just let me be. And on that mat, I realized that, of course, I was gaining a little bit of my mobility and physical strength back. But more than anything else, it really connected me to my own emotional healing. And, you know, the alchemy that happens on the mat, I think, is beautiful and powerful. And also the space that is allowed when, which is free of judgment in a class, is, I still think, is mysterious in so many ways, because we can all make connections to neurology and all of that, but there is something to it. And that beauty is in the mystery. And so after my first class, I knew something had really shifted, not only in my physical connection to my body, but even more than that was an emotional release that I felt. And I went to my teacher after my first class and I said, I really want to teach this. I want to share this with other people who are going through similar experiences with cancer and diagnosis. And she was like, why don't you come to your second class?
You were eager.
Yeah. So then she's very sweet. We are friends now. And she encouraged me to just come for more classes. And then I went into my 200-hour training in the studio. And in that, there was one of my mentors who came there to offer. She taught at Stanford Cancer Care. And so she was there to just show different ways of offering yoga for people who are going through different health challenges. After my 200 hours, I basically went into her as an apprentice, supported that program in Stanford, then got my 300 hours. And, you know, the study just continues, right? And when she left the state for personal reasons. I applied for the job. She thought I was ready. I was like, are you sure? And so she said, yes, you are. And I got to teach. One of my most dear experiences and precious experiences were teaching that particular class, because I got to just witness the power of this practice in real time, how it can really support and nourish and just be a container for so many experiences that people typically have during diagnosis, and also for caregivers. So it was a wonderful program. It was free for patients and caregivers. But I also saw then that there was so much of discrepancy and disparities in the folks who are coming there in terms of what access they have to healthcare, because there were some people who had to continue to work through their treatment for insurance and all of that. And that got me into looking at the larger systems and institutions that create this sort of disparities. And I got more involved into social change and political system that creates this. So, yeah.
I'm so glad I asked that add-on question because it revealed so much. And I think it is a nice way to talk about how you've moved into that work as well. So I love this blurb from your website, and I think it encapsulates quite a bit. So I'm going to read this little quote that you have up there. It says, "Dismantling the individualistic, able-bodied, white-centric yoga spaces, collaborating with social justice-focused thought leaders, and co-creating inclusive communities in yoga is a sacred intention." So with that as your intention, let's talk about some of the things that you're bringing to the world now, whether that's on your own or with accessible yoga. Maybe it's all just sort of intermixed here.
That's a really good question. So yes, that is my intention throughout, whenever I not only teach, but also just live in the world, because I believe that yoga is a lived experiential practice. That's what creates the transformation. It is bringing in the philosophy and embodying the teachings in your everyday life, in your relationships, in the community, and really dismantling the notion that yoga is only a practice that you do on the mat, and then once you roll it up, you're done. It's not a physical workout. There is a physical component to it, of course, and it's important to also acknowledge that, but it's really not only that. And the West, unfortunately, has kind of capitalized this asana practice and sort of taken it to only mean that yoga is solely an asana practice. So the work that I do is really unraveling this fallacy continuously about what yoga is and bringing in the different lineages, if you will, the traditions, the different stories, connecting it to the sheer expansiveness of its teachings. And I do that in different ways. I do that with offering workshops and programs, but also really collaborating with other teachers and practitioners. One of them right now is, of course, Accessible Yoga, kind of taking on a larger role right now. And I also work with other platforms like Tejal, for example, who offers a South Asian focused platform. And also really disrupting this notion that one can't find a Indian teacher anymore, or we hear all these things, but really, if you really want to look for one, you will. And also mentoring. So I think there has been so much lost in terms of mentorship for folks who are, especially in marginalized identities, trans folks, people with disabilities, people who are financially not able to afford really expensive studio classes and trainings. So I offer mentorship for people like that, because I really think that the West has amazing scholarship. I mean, all the books that I read right now are, so many of them are by really good scholars. And a lot of them are from European backgrounds. And that's also because they get the funding. They have people mentoring them, but we didn't have it for a while. And so I want to start supporting folks who are studying and dedicating their practice and deepening their practice and deepening their understanding of what yoga is. So in many ways, I hope to dismantle this notion that yoga is only asana and continuously encourage and invite folks into studying it more in depth.
That's wonderful. And I'm right there with you. So let's spotlight the work you do with Accessible Yoga next. So tell us specifically, I'm sure a lot of folks listening already know about Accessible Yoga, but what is the mission? And how do they carry out that mission?
That's a great question. Accessible Yoga is a nonprofit organization. It's a grassroots level organization. We have a very small staff, actually, but a very good one. And it is to really center accessibility and equity in yoga spaces, invite folks of all kinds of backgrounds, be it ethnicity or race or gender, sexual orientation, lived experiences, financial or economic or cognitive, intellectual, you know, different identities and its intersections, as teachers, as students, as practitioners. And we offer a variety of programs from, usually we have like a monthly theme, and then we support programming around that theme. Just for example, this month was yoga and cancer, and I hosted a community for people, for teachers who are doing this work, and it's any teachers or students who are interested in doing this work can come and listen and learn and network and connect with each other. So that's one example. We also offer lots of trainings on accessibility in the organization, along with many teachers from all kinds of backgrounds. Also right now, what I'm interested in also doing is expanding the notions of accessibility. So it's really not just what you do on the mat, offering variations for folks or whatever. It's also how much are these very esoteric teachings of sometimes like abstract and sometimes unaccessible for folks who are not from that culture or the country. How do we connect these really transformative teachings of the ancients and make it more accessible to folks, right? That's more my passion. A lot of this will be, again, presented in the conference, which is coming up on October 14th. So we have folks from all over the world. So it's one of the things that happened in the pandemic is that it changed so much in terms of folks being available, accessible because of Zoom and, you know, all technology. So for very little cost, we can host fantastic teachers who we probably otherwise couldn't have because it would have been cost prohibitive. And so all of us can learn from these fantastic teachers who are doing some really amazing work. From teaching folks on wheelchairs to learning from activists who are doing work in trans and non-binary spaces to Black teachers who are just amazingly brilliant. And so all kinds of folks are coming in to teach from all over the world. And it's for a pretty not very expensive because it's all online. That's one of our biggest also fundraisers, if you will, because that helps us to fund and support teachers, because I think yoga teachers itself are a very, what do you say, impacted community right now because of the pandemic. Sure. And so we always want to center their needs. We're not doing any, you know, we are not asking anybody to do anything for free, for example, especially the teachers. So we want to be able to honor and remunerate their offerings also. So it's a really good, it's an invitation for everyone who's listening to come and support our work and also learn and connect and get to know some amazing folks doing this work.
That's great. And the conference theme this year is moving from me to we.
Yes.
Tell us what is intended by that.
Yes. So we really wanted to bring in this concept, this theme, if you will, Michelle, right out into the open and say that if anything, yoga teaches us, I mean, the lineages and the traditions are so diverse that we cannot really define yoga to be a certain thing, right? It's that the definitions itself can fill up a book. But if there was a common theme, that sort of a thread that runs through all the teachings, it is this interconnection that we have with each other, that we are all a part of a bigger whole. And that bigger supra consciousness or whatever we want to call it, we can call it divine, we can call it whatever. And this interconnectedness has been lost. We need to kind of remember this. So each of our keynote speakers, for example, would be addressing that in their own way. And it's also an invitation for us all to consider how do we actually practice this interconnectedness in our everyday life? Like how do we make our decisions based, be it on what we buy, where we buy something, or how are we showing up for injustice? When do we speak out? If we have the capacity to do something for another, how are we doing that? So really noticing our own points of power and privilege and moving accordingly with discernment, which is yoga. Yoga is about acting with discernment. That's what Bhagavad Gita teaches us. This was a way for us to bring that theme out into the community and make it the center of all our work.
That's great. I think it's an amazing theme and I can't wait to see who you have all lined up there. And I'll provide some links obviously in the show notes here so folks can learn more about it and sign up.
Thanks.
So I would be remiss if I didn't mention that you're also going to be offering a workshop through our school, Inner Peace Yoga Therapy, in January on the Bhagavad Gita. And I know this is a subject you love to teach. Can you tell us why?
Absolutely. So Bhagavad Gita is one of my favorite subjects to teach, because I feel like it's an inquiry, it's an invitation for us to live in the world with discernment, with courage, compassion. And it is a teaching that invites us into a practice of engagement. That's one of the reasons, of course. And the other one is that this is one thing that I studied as a child, quote-unquote yoga texts that I studied as a child. So I have such a long personal history with it as well. And of course, it has evolved as I have grown and I have studied it more in depth with other teachers. But there is a beauty, there is a lyricism to this. And of course, there's a dramatic backdrop to it. So it has all the elements of human experiences, of confusion. Like, I think all of us have been in those situations where we didn't know what to do. The teachings of the Bhagavad Gita center around a person, Arjuna, who didn't know what action to take, and how the teacher, Krishna, then guides Arjuna into taking the right decision, or rather taking the right action. It has been a guide map to so many leaders, thought leaders, and everyday people, actually. So it has informed the cultural narratives of so many people through centuries. And I find it fascinating to study not only as a student and a practitioner, but also as a parent, as a citizen, as, you know, as a community member, just about an everyday person. So I try to apply that. It's an aspirational thing also to apply some of those teachings in our lives. And I think it can be deeply transformative.
Yeah, I can't wait for the workshop. And I'll certainly put a link there too. And I'm so glad that you're the one that's going to be facilitating it for us, just based on what you described there and your personal relationship with it for so long.
I'm excited too.
So last question, and I ask this of most of our guests, and it has to do with your own personal practice, because we put so much value on that ourselves as on the path to becoming a yoga therapist, to really feel rooted in yourself before you can share with others. And it really sets the foundation, comes before being in community and doing any work. So I'd love to know what your daily practice might look like these days.
Well, I look at my koshas as one of the frameworks for my practice. So physically, am I moving in a way which is nourishing, which is supporting my life, my everyday life? And it can look differently. Mostly I try to do some asana, or like, I'm 49 now, so some weight training, because I think that is important. So physically, that helps me to be in a better mood, actually, and be more sharper intellectually. And there's so much research about that as well, right? And then if we were to look at the other koshas, you know, one is the annamaya kosha, then the second would be the breath, and whether I'm providing enough time in my day to slow down and just notice my breath. Sometimes it is a proper meditation, or sometimes it's just sitting and drinking my chai in peace without any noise and just really savoring a quiet moment, silence. And whether I'm feeling connecting, somehow being connected to community, be it family or friends or whatever, am I doing something which feels nourishing? And I deeply believe that if we don't feel connected to the world around us in some way or the other, then we are harming not only somebody others, but also ourselves. So I might not be able to go through all the koshas every day. Obviously, that doesn't work. But that's definitely a model that I follow in for my everyday practice as much as possible.
That too is beautiful. And it really relates to how we look at the person when we are talking about being a yoga therapist and working with clients. So that's definitely a beautiful connection to our listeners, and I think what we share as well. It's been so nice talking with you today, Anjali. I really look forward to getting to know you more and learning from you in the months ahead. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Michelle, and thank you for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about who we are and what we do, visit us at innerpeaceyogatherapy.com.